I'm Carol Hills in for Marco Werman, and this is The World. We're going to start the show today by talking about China and Tibet, but not in the way you might expect. Over the years, we Americans have heard a lot about China's iron rule over the region. You know the slogan, Free Tibet. But details about the lives of Tibetans themselves and how they live in China today, those are harder to come by. That's what pushed veteran journalist Jocelyn Ford to introduce herself one day to a Tibetan living in Beijing, a woman named Zanta, who was selling jewelry on the street.
The day I stopped to talk to Zanta, I had an ulterior motive. You see, China tries to stop foreign reporters from traveling to Tibetan places. So I bought a bracelet as an excuse to talk to her.
That's a scene from an extraordinary new documentary film titled Nowhere to Call Home. Zanta is the central figure in the film, but Jocelyn Ford says at the time of their first random encounter, she really just wanted to talk to her.
Little did I know that that gave her a very different signal. She concluded that since I was the first foreigner to stoop down and talk to her and sit down on the pavement, that we must have been related in a past life.
Zanta's an interesting woman. She's Tibetan. She's uneducated. She's a young widow. Yet she makes this choice to leave her family and village in Western China. She moves to Beijing with her young son to give him a better life. Tell us about her personality.
Well, she is very headstrong. She is very determined. And she is conflicted because she both wants to be a good daughter-in-law and a good Buddhist, which means she must serve her in-laws. But at the same time, they are draconian. They don't want her son to go to school at all. And more than anything, she wants her boy to get an education. Because when she left her village, not knowing anything about the bigger world, when we first met, she'd never even heard of the United States, she is determined that his life will be different. She went to Beijing, couldn't read at the time. She taught herself. She's very smart. And she said if he's going to get ahead in life, he needs to learn Chinese. He needs to be literate. So she broke tradition and took her son with her and ended up in Beijing.
Yes, a lot of the film, a lot of the tension in the film is around her incredibly heavy sense of obligation to her family, to her in-laws. And her in-laws, let's face it, they're not very nice. I think what you really reveal in this film is the incredible sexism and the really horrible treatment of women in these Tibetan families. Did that surprise you?
It did indeed, because there is so much information around the world about Tibet, but nobody ever talks about this. I'm afraid that the political issue has often been given, you know, first-class status, and people have not considered the well-being of half the population, in my view. I was even more surprised when I learned that the word in Tibetan for woman is inferior birth, which says it all. So why hasn't the world talked about this?
I noticed in the film at one point that I think you were visiting her village with her. There are a lot of women in her family, so they're sort of treated badly by other families because there's not a lot of men. And at one point, a man is speaking, and someone says, well, a woman can't speak if a man is speaking. I mean, it's really kind of upfront, personal, visceral sexism. Did you hesitate at all at sort of revealing this piece of the story?
Not at all. I mean, that was one of the driving forces that made me determined, despite being independent and on a shoestring budget and facing great difficulties posed by both financial reasons and the government there, to pursue the story, because I felt it was very important for this to be heard. And to be frank, I too was totally caught off guard when I learned that women were not supposed to speak in front of men, because these things were so internalized by Zanta. She had never questioned them, that she didn't, you know, wasn't something she was about to explain. For example, in her family, there are four sisters, and they are bullied because they don't have able-bodied men to protect them. And it was years after I knew her that she told me that of the four sisters, three had attempted suicide because of abuse by in-laws. She said it wasn't their husbands necessarily. In some cases, it was. But I've just met a young Tibetan social worker in New York City who says the issue of domestic violence is serious in this country as well, in the Tibetan community. And a lot more needs to be done about it. But so far, these issues have been kept under wraps.
And of course, one of the central tensions, and it's quite, as a viewer, you get really wrapped up, is throughout the film, the question is whether she's going to relent and send her son back, and or whether the father-in-law will keep her son and not return him when he goes for visits. It's very dramatic and almost scary. And at one point, you intervene because Xanta is going to let him go visit the child's grandfather, and you're worried that Xanta should intervene and sort of protect him. Did you hesitate before? I mean, what was that like to sort of suddenly say, wait a second, he's your son, he's young, protect him?
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to be a journalist and stay out of it for a long time and not impose my views on Xanta, just let things unfold. But at one point, I just could not stand it anymore because nobody in Xanta's family was standing up for her. And I'd already invested a lot in trying to help the child and help Xanta get him an education. And suddenly it was going to evaporate because she was so beholden to her in-laws. So I said, you know, no, Xanta, I'm going with you to meet these in-laws. Now, she didn't want me to meet them because she thought they were too abusive of me, that they were insulting me. And basically, my conclusion was that they saw me as their rival, that I was taking their grandson away from them, and that I had become, in some ways, her second husband. I wasn't quite a woman in their typical sense. She belonged to them. She was essentially regarded as their property. But here I was. I had a little bit more of a power base than she did.
What's also interesting is how almost everyone in the film treat Xanta differently if you're with her. And you are a figure in the film. And there's a dramatic scene where Xanta is yet again trying to find a place to live in Beijing with her son. A Chinese landlord promises her that he'll rent her a room. And we're talking about kind of basically Beijing slums, very crude places to live. And he says she can rent. And then she goes back and he reneges. And there's this confrontational scene where she's yelling at him, really defending herself, defending Tibetans, defending her son. And you're there. And remarkably, you're filming this whole encounter. But the Chinese police who show up and the Chinese landlord, it seemed to me anyway that they treated Xanta better because you were there.
Absolutely. And in fact, at the root of this film is the issue of ethnic prejudice in China. The fact is that Caucasians tend to be treated better even than fellow Chinese often. We get the benefit of the doubt, whereas Tibetans or oftentimes people from Africa, they face a lot of discrimination and prejudice. So I felt, you know, that I should share some of this positive, favorable treatment with Xanta. And to be frank, I mean, I did get more involved in her life than I had initially intended to. But in part, that was because I thought it was so grossly unfair, the treatment she received, both as an ethnic minority in Beijing and as a woman in her own village, and that I had this power base due to no good reason, just the fact that I come from the United States, and that I really should try to do what I could to help her son get an education.
How old is the son now?
So he is now 14. He is going to a public school, and that was a huge accomplishment in China. It is very difficult for children of poor migrants from the countryside to get into urban schools at all. But we were able to do that. It is still a struggle, but he has been doing better. And I'm very pleased to say as well that there are two 15-year-old ethnic Chinese girls who had been tutoring him, and they did wonders for him. It was truly amazing.
And I hope our listeners get to see this film. It's just stunning visually and very gripping. Jocelyn Ford is a freelance radio and video correspondent based in Beijing. Her film, Nowhere to Call Home, debuts this week in New York City. Thank you, Jocelyn.
Thank you.
We posted a trailer for the film on our Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/PRI the world.